The Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Well, we know that sometimes demographics can drive trends in investments. For example, the baby boom population drove the housing market in the last half of a century. But what about the new market now, with boomers heading into retirement and the millennials? Is real estate being impacted? Joining us on the program is Rick Sharga. He is Chief of Marketing at 10X. And Rick, I want to talk about the impact of, I think there's 73 million baby boomers heading into retirement. I'd like to talk about, in your opinion, in which way is that impacting the real estate market? Obviously, they're out of the household formation stage. They're probably downsizing. Let's begin with the impact of boomers on real estate.
Well, Jim, the impact of boomers on real estate is not what we all expected it to be when we were doing our forecasts 5 or 10 years ago. We expected to have seen a flight toward downsizing as boomers aged and retired, and the first wave of boomers is retiring now. What's been a countervailing trend, and this really is a result of the Great Recession, is that we have the highest percentage we've ever recorded in 30-year-old and younger adult children living at home with their parents. And that has delayed what's probably still an inevitable move by those boomers into smaller properties, but it has clearly, clearly slowed things down. So we're beginning to see some movement, but until we see the percentage of those 30-something adults creating their own households, it's probably not going to be the full-scale movement that we've all anticipated for quite some time.
You know, that was one thing I noticed in the housing statistics coming out of the Great Recession, is that the new home buyers, which normally in past recoveries were a major section of the buying public, those numbers were a lot lower this time. So I guess that would reflect the very numbers you just talked about. And let's talk about the next generation, which is the millennials. Because as the boomers are downsizing, which means they're selling the big home, they're moving to smaller homes as they head into retirement, then Rick, who is buying those homes? So let's say that I traded up over the years as the family expanded, as the family got larger, I got a larger home, maybe I had a 3,000 square foot home, 2,500, maybe 4,000. Who's buying those homes now?
That's the trillion-dollar question, Jim, is who's buying the homes that the boomers are going to ultimately want to sell. Let me take a step back for you here, because I think we all focus on the millennials, but we've lost a generation somewhere in between there. Remember when Gen X was the generation du jour, and we all talked about them? The Gen Xers entered the housing market at exactly the wrong time. They came into their prime buying age right at the peak of the housing boom, and actually at that point, had the highest home ownership rate in history of any age cohort, and then unfortunately got slaughtered as the housing market went through its bust. Normally, that group would probably be the ones first in line to buy the properties from the boomers, because it really is almost a linear progression. You go from your entry-level house to a move up, and then probably your third or fourth buy is the one that, for the most part, people settle into until they're ready to retire. We've effectively almost wiped out an entire cohort from that progression. Because that Gen X contingent now has the lowest home ownership rate of the various age cohorts. Many of them have elected to continue to rent now that there are more single family homes available for rental. And so they've kind of stepped out of their normal buying cycle. The millennials, who actually comprise a larger segment of the population than even the boomers do, are getting to market more slowly. They began coming out of college during the recession, so their entry-level jobs have come at a much lower compensation rate than previous generations did. They also are coming out with the highest amount of student debt. So what we're seeing with that generation, the millennials, is they're staying in college longer. They're not getting their first real job until later. That's delaying when they get married. That's delaying when they have children. And all of those are inflection points that typically lead to somebody buying a property. The research I've seen suggests that they still aspire to home ownership in similar percentages as previous generations, but they're coming to market just a little later. And in fact, the age of the first-time home buyer in the last 18 months has actually gone up by about a year, which statistically speaking is pretty significant for that shorter period of time. But it's kind of a two-part problem. The Gen Xers have sort of voted themselves off the island, and the millennials haven't reached the island yet. And so there is this somewhat delayed response situation that we find ourselves in right now, which probably is going to work out okay since the boomers aren't selling in large numbers anyway.
I read an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal a couple of weeks ago, Rick, and they were talking about homes for sale in Los Angeles. And homes that were like what you would call, I guess, a starter home, $500,000-$600,000, they were on the market for less than a week and they were bidding wars. And then they talked down the street where there was a $3 million home that took 3 months to sell and sold for less than the listing price. I think it was $3 million. It sold for a little over $2.75 million versus the $500,000 home that sold above market and was on the market for a week. So it seems like we're seeing this bifurcated market. Is that what you're finding?
Absolutely. And this varies market to market. So real estate is still, you know, pretty much a local game. But particularly in Southern California, what I've been tracking, and we're located in Orange County, California, first of all, there's very little inventory available anywhere for the entry-level buyer. The new home builders have stopped building that kind of inventory. New home inventory across the country is nearly at a 40-year low. And again, people aren't moving up as quickly as they have in previous generations. So there's just not a lot of low-end inventory available. What's selling like hotcakes is that sort of mid-range property set. In Southern California, it's probably anywhere from $300,000 to a $750,000 house. If they're priced appropriately, don't stay on the market very long at all. If you get above a million into the what most people would look at as more of a luxury buy, there's less of a market for those properties and they are staying on the market a little bit longer. And it's just no big surprise. The higher the price point of the properties, the longer it takes to find a buyer willing to make that kind of commitment. But it is weird to watch both the high end and the low end of the market suffer at the same time. And in fact, first-time home buyers, I think for the full year last year and into the first quarter of this year, have been right around 30% of the market, where a more healthy market is closer to 40%. So things have still not fully recovered from the volatility of that boom and bust cycle we went through.
So, Rick, as the boomers head into retirement, they're trying to unload the bigger house that they raised the family in, maybe take some of that equity out, downsize. Who's going to buy those homes then?
Two things, Jim. First, what I expect the boomers to do is, like they've done just about every other market, they're going to fundamentally change the dynamic of that last home, of that post-retirement real estate market. What we are seeing is a growing diversity in senior living facilities. So it used to be you'd either live in your own home, you'd move in with your family, or you'd wind up moving into a nursing home. And now we're seeing, you know, 55 and up communities forming. We're seeing assisted living communities forming at varying levels of assistance. We are seeing facilities being built where you have more dedicated health care as boomers age or as elderly folks continue to age. And then you'll have your more traditional, really medical facilities like nursing homes. So I think one of the trends we're going to see moving forward is as boomers move out, they're going to be looking first for more active communities and where the communities are actually built around their needs. We're seeing a lot of that in Southern California right now and in Florida, where sort of retirement is a religion. So we're going to see a very different set of properties and trends that the boomers really facilitate. I think ultimately who's going to buy these properties are going to be the millennials. I just think it's going to take a little bit of time. In the interim, we are seeing some of those properties being sold to investors. We're seeing properties going to foreign investors. China last year actually surpassed Canada as the country that had the most buyers of U.S. residential properties. And there's still a flight to safety from a lot of foreign countries where investors would like to park their money in U.S. real estate as opposed to other investment opportunities. And there's a growing rental market for those single-family homes. So it's not a bad investment. And then we're seeing institutional investors here in the States continue to buy up some of these properties and then rent them out to people who like the experience of living in a single-family house but don't necessarily want to buy or haven't had their finances recovered to a position where they can buy. So I think you're probably looking at a 3 to 5 year window where we still continue to work through what's left over of the disastrous housing market bust before we get back to something that looks a little bit like a more normal housing market.
So, Rick, you take a look at another trend that we saw in the last upswing in real estate in the last decade. There was a trend towards second homes, maybe vacation homes. What's going on there?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was doing some research getting ready for this, and last year we actually saw the share of vacation home purchases dip a little bit. It went from about 21% of home purchases in 2014 to 16% in 2015. That's still relatively high, historically speaking. And I know there are real estate professionals with entire practices set up to sell these kind of vacation homes and second homes. So it's still a relatively high percentage of the market compared to historical trends, but it does seem to be slowing down a little bit. They're typically not cheap homes. They're between $150,000 and $200,000. And about half of the time, people are looking to buy these things to use themselves, and the other half of the time, they're looking to buy them as revenue-producing opportunities. And I would not be surprised to see a lot of boomers who probably have been burned a couple times, you know, going through the volatility of the stock market, rising and falling, parking some of the equity in their current homes into these vacation homes as better investment opportunities to help fund their retirement.
So in terms of this downsizing we've seen, one of the things that has impacted this retirement market is the low returns that we're seeing in the markets these days. I mean, you take a look at what you're getting in money market funds, what seniors can get in CDs or safe type investments or even treasuries. So doesn't that sort of dampen maybe some of the discretionary funds that would normally be available for like vacation homes with that demographic shift?
Great question. And logically, you would think yes. Having recently filed my taxes, I was surprised to learn that I'd made almost $15 in interest on my savings account last year. But keep in mind that the stock market has been trending in a positive direction for several years now, even with the rough first quarter it had in 2016. And the other thing that is true is that you happen to be one of those boomers who owned a house. Your home value since about 2011 has been rising at percentages that far outpace both inflation and wage growth. So one of the best places to have had your money parked for the last 5 or 6 years really is in your real estate. If you were already in a positive equity position 5 years ago, and particularly if you're in some of the hotter markets in the country, you're probably in an equity position now where you can take some of that equity and invest in a vacation property. And again, you're talking about typically a more mature category of homeowner, which means they're probably making a little bit more money than some of the entry-level folks are and can afford to do something like that. So I think on the one hand, if you're looking at funding a purchase through, you know, your stock proceeds or what's been going on with treasuries or bonds, clearly that's more challenging today than it has been in other cycles. But if you happen to have been invested in real estate and didn't use your house as an ATM back during the boom and bust cycle, you might be able to tap into that equity to invest in more real estate.
I want to talk about another trend, too. We just talked about second homes and then the boomers downsizing. Something that you see all the time if you're watching a financial station is there are numerous reverse mortgage commercials. Is this only going to grow? In other words, as let's say some boomers are saying, you know what, I've been in this house for 30 years. I don't want to move. Our friends are here. I don't want to make a change. Is that something that you see growing in the future as well as some of these boomers have to tap into their house or the equity in that house as a means of living?
I do see that, Jim. I see that. I think the reverse mortgage industry is still pretty much in its infancy. I do know that a lot of the regulators, the CFPB in particular, are starting to take a closer look at how reverse mortgages are put together and some of the consumer risk involved. So I expect really to have two seemingly countervailing trends. I do think we'll see more boomers tap into their equity by using reverse mortgages. I also think they will probably become more regulated, in some cases a little harder to get, perhaps, than they have been in the past just because of regulatory bodies that would like to protect consumers and their families from inadvertently getting themselves into trouble. But yeah, as the population ages, as people live longer in retirement and perhaps hadn't planned as effectively from a financial perspective as they needed to cover their retirement age, it's almost inevitable that they'll look toward their house as a means of helping to fund their retirement.
So as this trend continues, Overall, we know now, Rick, that the Fed has been embarking on raising interest rates. They ended taper a little over a year ago. They raised interest rates for the first time in December. We know that eventually, as rates begin to rise, at some point that will impact the housing market. So a final question, if I may, how healthy is the real estate market in today's economy?
Do you really think interest rates are ever going to go up again? I've been predicting for 5 years in a row that they're going to go up, and I've been wrong for 5 years in a row. At this point, I'm just going to predict it every year until I get it right. But when the Fed raised the Fed funds rate last year, we all expected rates on mortgages to go up. It's been fascinating to watch them go down, and now we're predicting that they might hit new historic lows before they bottom out. How healthy is the housing market? The housing market is probably three-quarters of the way back. We're going to probably see between 5.1 and 5.3 million existing home sales this year, probably half a million to 550,000 new home sales. Those numbers are well off the bottom of the market. There is, in a lot of places, a little bit more demand than there is supply because a lot of the inventory just is not coming to market yet, and that's propping prices up. We should, given our demographics, probably be a little closer to 6 million existing home sales and almost a million new home sales. So we have a ways to go. I don't think we're going to get there probably until 2018 at the earliest. On the good news front, credit is probably going to start loosening a little bit as buyers really do try and either get their own credit scores in line or have a little bit more cash to put down to sort of prime the pump. And foreclosure activity is probably going to be back to normal levels by sometime next year. We're still at about 25% more foreclosure activity than we've seen historically, but the properties in foreclosure now are all on loans that really were issued before 2010, and we're finally seeing them work their way through the system. So more or less, the housing market is in good shape. An interest rate shock could screw things up. An economic downturn would be really the only thing I can see in the coming months or year that might derail the market. But the one cloud on the horizon I would offer is that we're probably going to hit an affordability wall in some markets. The Bay Area looks like it might be suffering from that already. Southern California, Austin, Texas, a handful of markets around the country where prices have been escalating far, far more rapidly than wages.
So overall, you would say, given the shape of the economy, the housing market looks still pretty healthy. One of the things, at least I noticed in our area, Rick, that we just haven't seen the overbuilding like I did in the last decade, where you would have home builders would come in, they would start a subdivision, they would build like a whole slew of houses on spec. They've been very tight on their inventory in this go around. At least that's what I've discovered in our neck of the woods.
And it's true across the country, Jim. The builders, by and large, are not building on spec. Among other things, they can't get the financing for it because the people that financed the last round got burned pretty badly. We are seeing a disproportionate share of new construction dedicated toward multifamily building instead of single family homes. In fact, it's the opposite problem from the one we had in the early 2000s when people were overbuilding. There is probably latent demand for new homes that's simply not being met right now because, as I think I mentioned earlier, the new home inventory across the country is at nearly a 40-year low. It is starting to come back a little bit, but that's one of the things that will start to generate more buying activity and probably will free up some of those lower-priced properties that aren't on the market right now because those homeowners have nowhere to move.
Wow. All right. Well, listen, Rick, if our listeners would like to follow the work that you do, how could they do so?
We have a blog that we publish. We have something new up there almost every day at 10x.com. That's www.10-x.com. Or follow me on Twitter at Rick Sharga or LinkedIn, and I post things about our company and about the housing market there pretty regularly.
Rick, well, listen, I'd like to thank you for joining us here on the program. So it sounds like, at least right now, the housing market is still healthy. All the best to you, sir.
Thank you, Jim. Always a pleasure.
You know, it's important to remember, Jim, that for many, many people, real estate is the one big asset that they tend to have. And it preserves value, as a matter of fact, through a financial crisis. So the whole issue of real estate and how you plan to include it in retirement plans is really important.
Yeah, it really is, because, you know, one of the things I had to discuss with Joe is his roommate, which was a friend of both him and Edna. I mean, she's going to have to go find and live with her children, because that's her only choice. Because, you know, in this case, Joe simply could not afford the extra $3,000 a month for that extra one bedroom to support a friend of both he and his deceased wife. It just wasn't a reality. There just wasn't the funds to do that. And so that was what he was going to have to basically tell his friend, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to go back to a one bedroom, and, you know, you're going to have to find someplace to live, and it can't be with me because I can no longer afford to pay this. It's rather interesting because, speaking with my guest this week, Rick Sharga, it's one of the trends we're starting to see here, John, in some of the new housing developments. I always like to go out on weekends sometimes and take a look at these new housing developments. You know, I always track what's going on in real estate, talking to the builders, lenders, what are the trends, is buying still remaining strong, which it is. And one of the new trends we're seeing in homes here is multiple dwellings. In other words, you know, converting sort of a guest house. One development around here has a guest house option on the property. You're seeing garages that can be converted into separate living expenses with a kitchenette and a separate entrance. So this is a trend, not only millennials living at home, but also parents taking care of their parents. And that's a trend that's going to persist, John. And as Rick talked about, it is becoming a bigger and trend. We're going to see much more of it in the future. Well, in the meantime, we're out of time here on Lifetime Income. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the program. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.